Now let's get into work for Ephesians. The guy who wrote the book, his name is Paul. He was previously a murderer of Christians. He lived and breathed the destruction of Christianity. He had a radical encounter with Jesus, became a radical follower of Jesus. He suffered more and saw more than any other Christian person, planted more churches, saw more people get saved than any other Christian person. He wrote about 30% of the New Testament, and when he's writing Ephesians, he's writing from prison in Rome to all the churches he planted before he dies. Now the town of Ephesus is the group of people that live there are called the Ephesians. It's one of the largest and most influential towns in the Roman Empire at the time. It's a center for trade, commerce, and politics. It's highly populated, so it's kind of like Kansas City or St. Louis. At this point, I'd usually bash on Kansas City or St. Louis. However, because Kansas City beat the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, I don't really have a lot to bash on. All I can do is really say undefeated no more. Okay, so, 13-1, the trail has been derailed is all I'm saying. What? The trail has been derailed. Okay, here we go. Okay. Okay, there's lots of magic and God worship. There was a revival when Paul came to town. There were many salvations, healings, and miracles. They burned about $7 million in witchery material, which got all the people who owned it pretty mad, so they tried to kill Paul. It was pastored by Apollos, Priscilla, Aquila, and John. And then it's mentioned in Revelation 2 because they forgot their first love. Now, we spent the first couple months of this book of Ephesians kind of talking through chapters 1 to 3. What Paul does when he writes books is he says, here's what God has done for us, and then he'll say, here's how we respond in light of what God has done. So we're going to really quickly recap 1 to 3, that God chose us from the foundation of the world, that he predestined us for adoption, that in Jesus we have redemption and forgiveness of sins, that in Jesus we have an inheritance, in Jesus we're predestined for a purpose, in Jesus we're sealed with a promise, that Jesus has exceedingly great power toward those who believe, that Christ rose himself from the dead and is seated again in heaven, that all things are under his feet, that he made us alive while we were dead in sin, that he raised us up to new life, that we are his workmanship, that Christ has brought us near when we are far away, that there is no longer any separation between us and Jesus, that in Jesus we have boldness and confidence when we approach God, that everything in heaven and earth is named after him, that he strengthens us by his power and by his glory, that the love of Christ surpasses our understanding, that he's able to do far more than we could ask or imagine, and that for those reasons, to God alone be the glory. Now, as Paul transitions out of that, what he likes to do is say, if those things are true about Jesus, then we respond in certain ways. So Ephesians 6 is the way we respond in family. So if you have a Bible, you can open up to Ephesians 6. If you don't own one, we put one under your chair for you. You can keep that. That's our gift to you. It's page 839 in that Bible. Otherwise, we'll put every verse on the screen for you tonight. All right, so Ephesians 6, 1-4. Here's what we got for you tonight. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord. We've got a bottom line. It's at the bottom of your handout, where if you get nothing else from our talk tonight, we want you to get this one point, and it's this, that family glorifies God. If you're a student here, the last couple weeks in Ephesians 5, 22-33, we said marriage glorifies God. For the next 2 weeks, we're going to say that marriage or that family glorifies God. As you get that written down, we're going to pray together, and then we're just going to start having some fun in Ephesians tonight. All right, so let's all pray together. Jesus, we're thankful tonight for grace and mercy that's been given to each of us. Jesus, we're thankful for the cross. God, tonight we're thankful for parents. God, we're thankful for children. God, we're thankful that each of us has an opportunity to be Jesus on the earth, that God, we get one of the immense privileges of being able to reproduce and multiply, that God, to be able to bring a child into the world is one of the greatest privileges on the earth. God, to be able to raise them up in godliness is, again, one of the greatest privileges. So God, I pray tonight, as every one of us is a child and every one of us gets to have the scriptures be revealed to us, God, I pray tonight that it would be overwhelmingly true that we see how much it means not only to be a child here on the earth, but to be called children of God. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. All right, so tonight we begin a two-week mini-series where we're going to talk about children tonight because the Bible puts that first, and then we're going to talk about parents next week because the Bible puts that last. And so one of the things that I think, regardless of where we all sit tonight, is every one of us can say this statement. It's the first blank we've got for you up top, that I'm always someone's child. So every parent in the room, your child. Every child in the room, your child. There's kind of this double whammy of childness, and regardless of how far I get in life, Raymond Francis Chandler III will always be my dad. Now, I almost got Raymond Francis Chandler IV, which that would have been totally a different scenario if I got this. I would have called myself four. And I will always be Doris Elaine Anderson Chandler. I will always be her son. She will always be my mom. Regardless of whatever changes, those two things will always be true. So even if they die, I'm still their child. My dad will still be my dad. My mom will still be my mom. Now, everything else on the planet is subject to change. Like, at any point, Rachel or I could die and we're no longer spouses. So spousehood does last while we're spouses, but when she dies, she's no longer my spouse. She's dead. And the same would be true of nearly anything else. I could lose this job at any moment. There's that teetering line between doing series about zombies and allowing Pastor Gary to keep me here. There's just this fine line between what I'm allowed and what privilege extends, and at any moment that could change. Honestly, my health could change. Anything in your life is subject to change, but when you're a child, you will always be someone's child. And as always being a child, it means that as such, there's a lot of responsibility that goes with that. And so we were going to kind of talk through how every one of us is that way. So for parents tonight, this is our opportunity to say, yes, you do have children, but yes, you are still a child. And that though hopefully you've moved out of the house by now, that those things will still be true to you as you go down the line. And then for children, there will be a day where you raise children, and yet you will still be a child yourself. And so that doesn't allow us to just say, well, I never have to worry about being a child anymore. And then next week when we get into parents, for the children in the room, someday you will be a parent, so it's good lessons going forward. And then as parents in the house, it's a good lesson for where you are. And so every time we talk about parents, children, husbands, wives, there's always an original intent, and then there's where we are currently. And so we're going to kind of go revisit original intent, which is Genesis 1. And here's what God says, Genesis 1, that God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the heavens, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them. God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it and have dominion over all the fish of the sea, over all the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth and every tree that which with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food, and to every beast of the earth and to every bird of the heaven and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. And God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning the sixth day. And so Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 also repeats this and says, God creates, God forms, God sets a system in place, and everything is very good at that point. If you know your Bible very well, Genesis 3 happens, and very good goes very bad very fast. All right, so here's Genesis 3. Adam and Eve eat from this tree. That gets really bad deals. And so as a result, here's what God says because they disobeyed. The Lord God said to the serpent, because you've done this, cursed are you above all livestock and above all beasts of the field. On your belly you shall go, and dust you shall eat all the days of your life. This is what's called the first proclamation of the gospel right here. I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head and you shall bruise his heel. If you know about Jesus, that's where the gospel comes in. To the woman, he said, I will surely multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. Your desire shall be for your husband and he shall rule over you. And to Adam, he said, because you have not listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the day of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth of you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. From out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. And so it goes bad quickly for these two. God asks them to leave the garden. They start having babies. All right, first babies, Cain and Abel. Goes really well for Cain and Abel. So well, brother murders brother. Now I think we can say, based on a survey of the field, everybody's doing better than that so far. Unless you're not doing better than that so far, and I apologize. But every parent in the house should go, so far we're succeeding better than the first. And so as that's true, we see that continually when you look through the Bible, there's not a lot of examples where godly parent raises godly children and that's just, you know, all peaches the whole way through. Often there's godly parents who raise children who sometimes do a lot of stupid stuff and may come back again. There's often times where they raise a child who just turns out to be a spawn of the underworld. And that continues and it goes on. You've also got wicked parents who raise godly children. Those same godly children can have wicked children. There's just this spiral of who knows how it works, but godly parents can raise wicked children. Wicked parents can raise godly children. That it's just this weave of destruction and craziness in the Bible. And then one of the things that the Bible says is that because things went wrong that way, one of the places where it's going to go wrong is in regards to our role with parents. This is where the book of Romans comes in. And Romans 1, 28 to 32 puts it like this. Since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind to do what ought not to be done. They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness. Now here's the list. Evil, covetousness, and malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless. Though they know God's righteous decree that those who practice such things deserve to die, they don't only do them, but give approval to those who practice them. And so you've got this list of all kinds of badness, and stuck in the middle is disobedient to parents, equal to murder, equal to deceit, equal to riots, equal to gossip, slanderers, haters of God are those who are disobedient to their parents. 2 Timothy 3, 1-9 also talks about this. And it says, but understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying its power. Avoid such people. For among them are those who creep into households and capture weak women, burdened with sins and led astray by various passions, always learning and never able to arrive at a knowledge of truth. Just as Jannes and Jambres opposed Moses, so these men also opposed the truth, men corrupted in mind and disqualified regarding the faith, but they will not get very far, for their folly will be plain to all, as was that of those men. And so, as we see that, again, you've got this list of all kinds of craziness, and in the midst of that is disobedience to parents. Now, as time continues, one of the things that's true of where we live right now is everything is changing exponentially by the day. And even there's that new commercial that talks about 4G and says that everything is like 40 seconds ago. Like you record something, post it to the internet. If you don't know about it instantly, you're a dummy. And if you know the internet, that's very true. Every 10 seconds, there's something new. And you can't even enjoy something in the moment because something better has already arrived. Best Buy has that commercial for Christmas time where someone buys a gift. They buy the new 3D TV, and then it says the new 4D TV's out. And there's a little girl who's skipping around and saying, you bought the wrong TV, silly head. And then there's the lady who gets the new phone, and then it says, hey, the new phone, and she's all upset about it. Our world is exponentially changing and exponentially growing, both in technology, information, and access. And so as those things change, man, in the last 50 to 60 years, the way by which children and parents interact has changed exponentially. Man, I would say from the time when I was a child, which wasn't that long ago, 28 now, it wasn't that long ago, the time from when I was a child and to when the students now, you are children, man, it's changed in that decade. That the difference between how children and parents interact has changed in a crazy way. A lot of that due to our culture, I think. A lot of that even due to being what's presented. And I think it comes off really innocent. It comes off as one of those things that's all right. But you started to see, even in television, there is a shift by how Leave It to Beaver interacted with his parents and how Bart Simpson interacted with his parents. To even where like Nickelodeon, which is now like teenage Nickelodeon, how they interact with their parents. And you see some of the things that have happened in our culture, that there is a way that you can talk to your parents that it seems is very popular and prevalent. But 50 years ago would have gotten you stoned, that you would have been strung up in the town hall by your fingernails, and everybody would have gone disobedient to parents. Whereas now it's accepted that you can just be an outright jerk to your parents, and that's totally okay. And so I think even as that's happened, so even all the parents, amen, all the children go, I hate you. As that's been true, man, things have not always been this way, and nor will things stay this way. Honestly, if we trust the scriptures, it's only going to get worse. But even though the Bible said those things thousands of years ago, man, its truth is still relevant to us today. So as we kind of launch into Ephesians 6 and kind of help to unpack some of that, you'll come at me with one of two things. You'll either see where I'm at as a disadvantage or you'll see it as an advantage. You could see the disadvantage is that I'm young And some of you have pairs of shoes older than I am, or t-shirts or whatever else. Some of you have things that are way older than I am. So you could say that that's a disadvantage, that I have a child who's 11 months, so what do I know about raising a teenager? Or you can take it as an advantage that I'm young enough to still know what it's like to be a son in present day, and that I have experience as both a husband and a father. My hope is you see it as an advantage. And I will not say, here's how you raise a teenager. You will not hear that from me tonight. I don't have one. I have an opportunity to be around anywhere from 40 to when we have crazy nights, 120 of them on the weekly. I visit a local high school that's got 1,200, so I kind of have some experience in the department, but I have no idea what it's like to go home to one. My son currently, his life is sustained by us. So he's not going to slam a door to his bedroom. He's not going to drive off in his car. He's not going to text somebody with his cell phone. He's not going to blast me on Facebook. The worst that we'll get is him grabbing the top of a pack and play or his crib and just screaming relentlessly. And some of you have a teenager who responds the same way. So there's one of those two things. And my context is just going to be to say, the Bible says there's a better way for us, a better system for us. And so we're just going to trust the scriptures that that's the way to go. And so that's the way I'm going to launch at it. And so as a parent, hopefully you can trust me there. And then as a child, hopefully you trust me there. As we've said over the last couple of weeks, God reveals to us a lot of metaphors. And one of the primary metaphors that God reveals the way we interact is with children. And so that's another blank we've got for you tonight, that children are a metaphor. When God instituted a couple of things, which we'll get to the God-man metaphors in a second, when God made these things, he was allowing us to see a picture of what our relationship with him is like. And so, yes, those things exist for a reason, but ultimately they're to say, here's you, here's me as God, and here's a picture of what it looks like. And so we've said consistently in this room that the God-man metaphors, the primary ones, are marriage, childhood, and adoption, and that you'll learn primarily a lot of information. If you do one of those three things, your understanding of God will be different. So to all the married people in the house, if you knew Jesus when you got married, or even if you've known Jesus after you've gotten married, your understanding of Jesus and him calling us the bride has changed a lot since you've gotten married. And in fact, if you continue to read the Bible and see that marriage metaphor over and over and over again, Jesus convicts you about how you're married because of how the metaphor works. When you have a child, if you love Jesus or as you've loved Jesus, there's this understanding when God calls us the children of God, there's a new understanding that comes there. And then the other one is when you adopt, if and when you adopt. And those three places are things that God instituted from the beginning to say, here's our relationship, here's a little bit of what it looks like. So when my wife and I got married, my understanding of Jesus and I interacting as him, the one who comes for me, and me being the bride, and that changed a little bit because I had a chance to get married. When we had a kid, it wasn't so much the birth of our child that overwhelmed me, and it overwhelmed me. I'm not a crying man. I'm in touch with my emotions, I feel like, on most points, but I don't cry often. When I had our son, when our son was born, I didn't have him. When our son was born, it got ugly really quick for me. As I had a chance, I said, I don't want to see him get born. I just want someone to bring him to me. But when the moment came, they were like, all right, Dad, you could come see. And I was like, whoa, you're doing great. Yeah, and then there was this encouragement, and then I had a chance to see him arrive, and I was like, oh, and then man, I started crying the ugliest tears you've ever seen. It didn't stop for an hour and a half. And there was a point where I was outside of the hallway in labor and delivery, and I was just uncontrollably weeping. Part of that because I just realized that I brought a child into the world and I'm responsible for him. But part of that going, man, Jesus was so present in the room when that happened for me that just messed me up completely. And then now having a child, man, I can get how Jesus will stick with us through some things. And I'm just in the beginning stages of discipline. I can see how Jesus will stick with us, man, to see love and affection happen in an instant. Man, I get how Jesus can create and in an instant has love and affection for us. And I know already, man, Jude could botch it terribly. That's not going to change love and affection for me. He'll always be my kid. And so as those things happen, one of the places where Jesus says, here's an idea of what you and I are like, is in childhood. So I'm going to hit you with a lot of verses that just proves my point because I think that helps. John 1, 9 to 13 says this, the true light which gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own and his own people did not receive him, but to all who did receive him, who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor the will of man, but of God. We're going to go to John 11, 45 to 53. We'll put that on the screen for you. It says this: many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen all that he did, believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council together and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. But one of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, said to them, you know nothing at all, nor do you understand that it is better for that one man should die for the people, not the whole nation should perish. He did not say this of his own accord, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the nation, and not for the nation only, but also to gather into one the children of God who were also scattered abroad. So from that day, they made plans to put him to death. Romans 8, 14 to 23, this is a really popular one, says it like this: for all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons of God, and you can count that women of God also. For you do not receive the spirit of slavery to fall back into fear, but you have received the spirit of adoption as sons, by whom we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit of himself bears witness with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, then heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we also might be glorified with him. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be set free from its bondage to corruption and obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the bursts of childbirth until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. Philippians 2, 14 to 16 says this: do all things without grumbling or disputing, that you may be blameless and innocent, children of God without blemish in the midst of a crooked and twisted generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast to the word of life, so that in the day of Christ I may be proud that I did not run in vain or labor in vain. 1 John is really popular with children terminology. 1 John 3 says it like this: see what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Verse 10 in the same chapter says this: by this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. In chapter 5 of 1 John, he says, everyone who believes that Jesus is the Christ has been born of God, and everyone who loves the Father loves whoever has been born of him. By this we know that we love the children of God when we love God and obey his commandments. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments. His commandments are not burdensome. For everyone who's been born of God overcomes the world, and this is the victory that has overcome the world, our faith. Who is it that overcomes the world except the one who believes that Jesus is the Son of God? And so as we see that this is with that metaphor where God says, here's how you and me work. As you come to have faith in Jesus, you become adopted as a son or daughter, and that as a son or daughter, there are new privileges to you that were not there as a son or daughter. Every parent in the house can say, there are lots of children out there, but there are certain privileges that come with being your kid. And there could be any number of things that come that way, but there are all kinds of babies in the earth, but your babies get something special. And so as that's true of you as parents, and as that's true of you of children, it means when God does the same and when God calls us our children, that there are certain privileges that come with that, primarily being that when we die, we enter into eternal life. And so as God said, here's how that works, that's going to allow us to say, when we see Ephesians 6, God's not just saying, do this thing because I told you. He's saying, here's one of the places where I receive glory when this is done well. And so we're going to read Ephesians 6, 1 to 4 again, and then we are going to rip it. So, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in discipline and instruction of the Lord. Colossians is a sister book to Ephesians. It's a lot shorter this time, but Colossians says it like this: children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Fathers, don't provoke your children lest they become discouraged. And so there's two words we really need to define here. And I know I'm just kind of ripping it relentlessly with information. This will stop at some point. Here's obey. Obey, defined biblically, is to hear under authority. So to have someone in authority over you and to hear their words they're saying because they're an authority in your life. And then as you do that, that you hearken to a command, meaning when it's, hey, go do this, that you go and do that. To obey, to be obedient, and to submit to, that's obedience. And that honor is to estimate or fix value to, so to say that there's value in that thing, that's honor, to evaluate the person accurately and honestly, and to treat him or her with deference, which is a humble submission, meaning I willingly follow, reverence, kindness, courtesy, and obedience, which his or her station in life or character demands. And so for parents to say, as children, why do you obey your parents? Because you're hearing under authority, because they're an authority in your life, to listen to commands, to obey, to be obedient, to submit to, that you honor, that you estimate or fix value, that when you listen to that person and you say, man, I can accurately and honestly say they're a person whom I should honor because of the place that they hold in my life, i.e. your mom and dad. And so because you do those things, both obedience and honor are the ways that we do that. And there's these easy ways for us to remember it. Obedience is the duty, and honor is the disposition or the way by which obedience is born. So obedience is the thing that we do. When you honor, it's easy to be obedient. When you live in a culture of dishonor, you don't want to be obedient to that because all you've done is dishonor. But if you're consistently in the position of honor, it becomes really easy to obey. If you're consistently saying, man, there is value there, there is a reason to respect there is a reason to obey there, there's all kinds of stuff there. When you do that, it makes it much easier for you to obey because you're consistently giving value to something. If you're consistently devaluing something, it becomes really hard to obey that. And you can easily, as children, translate that to your teachers. If you consistently dishonor your teachers when they say, do this, your first response is not going to be hip, hip, hooray. But if you consistently honor your teachers when they say, do this, it's going to be easy for you to follow that way. If you consistently dishonor the police, it's going to be hard for you to be obedient to the rules. Now, they're always going to win. They'll either win now or they'll win later, but the police always win. If you consistently dishonor, it's going to be hard to obey. But if you honor police and honor laws, then it's easy to be obedient. If you speed a little bit, it gets hard to obey the speed limit. If you consistently honor the speed limit, it becomes easy to obey it. All right, so Paul gives us four reasons, and we have those as blanks for you tonight. Four reasons why we need to be obedient to the parents. And the first one is that it's right. And there's nothing worse in all the world to hear to do something than simply because it's right. I think you'll find that there's a second one that's much worse. But to say, do this because it's right, I think all of us hate that. And that there's something internally in us that just gets messed up. The reason it's right is not a moral thing. It's an order of the universe thing. And so the order of the universe goes like this, that there's a natural order. And that means when something has something, the thing that it has is obedient to that which had it. And so parents will say, I brought you into this world. I can take you out of it. That's a natural order thing. All right. So when dogs have puppies, puppies don't emerge from the womb and say, let me tell you how this is going to go, mother dog. That's not the way it operates. No, you see puppies are obedient to mother dog and father dog, and then you'll see there'll come a time where little baby dog wants to fight with mother dog and father dog. There are one of two solutions. Someone's going to die or someone's going to leave. And I would say that that's accurate to humanity, that there's going to come a point where a little puppy dog needs to leave the roost, and there's one of two options. They're either going to leave because they got killed, or they're going to leave because they willingly chose to go. And so I think that there's a tension between parents and children that you're never going to resolve. And the tension is as a child, as you grow up, you're going to feel that you can go out and take on the world on your own. You're going to have this natural feeling that's going to say, it's time for me to get out of this place. The problem is our culture is convincing you that at 8, you're ready to do so. So 8-year-olds can start rebelling against the man because they're ready to get out in the real world. And what's true of 8-year-olds is they are in no place to be able to take the world on. That goes 8-year-olds, and we'll just do odd number or even numbers, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds, 18-year-olds. Now, there is a gap from 16 to 18 that when a car is given, Even more, it feels I can take this world on. Why? Because I drive. So anywhere within 300 miles in a tank of gas, I can be there and dominate. So when you turn 16, the natural thought is I can now go dominate the world. I've got a job that pays me $8. I'm rich. I get 250 bucks a week. I can live off of that. And so what your parent is going to do is say, you're not ready to take on the world yet, $250 paycheck. And you're going to say, but I am. I can save up for a month and buy a new sound system. I'm ready to take this world on. And so there's this tension that's going to happen until finally the tension is going to say, go out and take the world on. And so we're never going to resolve the tension. It's always going to be present because that natural order is there that's going to start to say, you need to feel, I got to get out of this place. And it's not a bad thing until you start combating with it. So if you're a child who's getting ready to get out and take the real world on, don't treat your parents as the enemy. It's just this thing in you that's saying, you should be moving out of your home, and thank Jesus that he did it that way, that it's just the way that it goes. And so natural order says, I made you, therefore you can't tell me how things go. And then the other thing is that since you were made by something that's older than you, has more experience than you, has more money than you, owns things, since that is true, it would give precedence to say, because those things are true and they're not true of you, that you should listen to that thing above you. And so we do this all the time, that if I have more money and you want to make money and you know that I've made money, well, you're going to ask me, how did you make money? It's dumb for somebody who doesn't have money to look at somebody who does have money and has made it honestly and has said, here's where you messed it up. The guy with money has opportunity to say, if you follow these things, here's how you make money. And so parents have the opportunity to look at children and say, I've been alive longer than you are. Here's how you stay alive. Now, as a child, you can say, I don't want to play by those rules. And we'll get to what's going to happen with that later. So there's that. And then the spiritual order of things is that the way God made it. And then the reason God made it this way is, we'll get into it, but as God made it that way, the second blank we've got for you, why children obedience to parents is there, is because it's commanded. And so the only thing worse than saying something is right is saying, I told you so. So every child hates the statement, do this, why am I going to do this? Because I told you to do this. That's the worst thing any kid can have. And every parent hates it when it comes out for the first time because you think of your parents, but then you go, this is the way that it is. Like, why is this a rule in my house? Because it's my house. So I can say this is the way it goes. And so as Jude grows up, right now, one of the things that he's starting to do is he wants to touch things. It's his way of interacting with the world. There are certain things he should not touch. DirecTV, Blu-ray player, stereo system, television, and a whole host of other things. But right now, those are the most appealing because they have lights. And so when he starts to crawl, my command is do not touch those. And as a result, if he does not follow the command, there's a swat on the hands. With a no, Rachel was laughing at me the other night because I was reasoning with him at 11 months old. So I'm like, Jude, you can't touch the sound system. That's not the way that this works. Don't touch the sound system. Touch the toys. And he had this look on his face that didn't understand. And I'm like, he probably needs to be spanked again. I think that's the father in me. But there's that understanding of, eventually he'll get this. And so as I'm like lightly swatting his hand, he just goes, but as I've just started to say, no, command, he goes, oh, okay. And then starts to go on his merry way. Now he'll be distracted for 10 seconds and then look at the sound system again and go, pursue, right? Plugs in the wall, all of it's there. There's that I told you so. Exodus 20:12 is where God says in the beginning, here's how this goes. Honor your father and mother that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. This is one of the Ten Commandments. Deuteronomy 5:16 says it again. It says, honor your father and mother as the Lord your God commanded you, that your days may be long and that it may go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Ephesians says this is the first command with the promise. So the first time God says, do this, and then here's what's going to happen. Other places we get, don't murder, don't steal, don't covet, don't commit adultery. Those things are just those things. He doesn't say, don't kill people, you won't go to prison. It's just don't kill people. Whereas with father and mother, it says, honor your father and mother. It's going to go well with you in the days that you live. Your days are going to be long and the land that I'm giving to you. Now, up until this point, society was jacked. Everybody was nomadic. Everybody was traveling around. Everybody had a clan. So the clan served the clan. And so as, you know, say I was born to the clan of Chandler, whoever's the head of the Chandler clan is the head. We all submit as clansmen. And so as clans travel around, certain clans get good at certain stuff. So the Chandler clan, we're originally from France. The reason it's called Chandler is because it's really Chandler, because they made candles, hence where we get chandelier from. So my family is a bunch of suspended lights makers. And so the Chandler name bears, we make lights that hang from the ceiling really well. And Chandler got good at that. Chandler got so good, they named something after him, the chandelier. And so as that happens, Chandler's got good at stuff. Now, when God moves Israel into Israel, he says, you're all going to start having towns. You're all going to start making cities. And so as clans move into towns, they start having cities. It's impossible for the clan to be ruled by huge acreage. And so what happens is that the family unit gets smaller. And what used to be clansmen being the head now is father, mother, and the family unit increasingly shrinks to father, mother, and those that are in your house. And so as that begins to play out, there's this transition where God says, one of the things that as you move from being a clan, you're going to have fathers and mothers, you're going to have family units, and as a family unit, children, honor your father and mother as the Lord has said to you to do, that your days will be long, and that it'll go well with you in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. So it's right, it's commanded. The next thing we see from what we read from there is that it'll go well. And I don't think that there's any piece of biblical information that could be any more true that if you obey and honor your parents, it's going to go well for you. That it's just there. As a child, if you obey and honor your parents, life will be well. You can flip that on its head and say, if you disobey and dishonor your parents, life is going to go bad. And so at every place where you as a child have had a moment where you've gone, oh, my parents, it's probably because you disobeyed or dishonored. It's not because they just walked in the house and said, I'm a tyrant, hate me. And you just said, that's it right there, I knew it. They are a tyrant. It was that moment where they said, here's some obey, here's some honor, and you were like, uh-uh, not doing it. I'm my own man. I'm 12. I can wear deodorant. I can almost shave. These are the way that the world is. And as you did that, it did not go well. And so that happened. It will go well. Proverbs 13:1 says, a wise son hears his father's instructions, but a scoffer does not listen to rebuke. And so much of teenage angst can be relieved if honor and obedience are present in children. And I'll say for every child who's in the room, honor and obey and watch how well life goes. It's going to go really, really well. It's going to be the best life you've ever imagined if honor and obedience are present. And then you can say, if honor and disobedience aren't present, then what's going to happen? It's not going to go very well. And then the last thing that he says is that you'll live longer. The last blank we've got for you there in children's obedience to parents is that I will live longer. So it will go well for you if you honor and obey, and you will live longer. And again, truer words have never been penned. Proverbs 30:17 says, the eye that mocks a father and scorns to obey a mother will be picked out by the ravens of the valley and eaten by the vultures. Symbol of death. You are dead when birds are eating your eyeballs out. And so this has both a figurative and a literal presentation. The figurative is that parents have the ability to present death to you as a child. And death can come in many different ways. They can take things from you. All of the things that you like, phone, entertainment devices, television, internet, they can just make your life feel as if you're dead. And that is a parent's privilege and prerogative. If you're going to do something that honor and obedience are not present at, I'm going to make you feel as if you've died. And that's just one of the things that parents do. Why? You should stop doing that. And so one of the ways that they can do that is a figurative way of saying, you dishonor and disobey your parents, you're going to feel like you're dead. Because every part of your life is going to feel like you're dying. The other thing is a literal one. In the ancient world, when these words were penned, a parent's prerogative was as if a parent or if a child does not obey or honor, that it's the parent's prerogative to kill them. And so when Proverbs penned this, when Exodus pens this, historically, it would have been okay for a parent to say, my child is no longer honoring or obeying me. I'm killing them now. There was no judge. There was no jury. There's only executioner. And so as a child, you were held hostage by, if I don't honor and obey, I'm going to die, literally. And so that's just the way that it was. And so when Exodus says, if you do these things, it's going to go well for you and you're going to live longer, it both meant it figuratively and literally. Now, your parents grew up in a culture where it's not okay to kill you. They grew up in a culture where if they do that, they're probably going to go to prison for a long time. In Exodus culture, they grew up in a culture where if they killed you, everybody would have said, I told you, man. I saw that when that kid was born, he was a little bit disobedient, had some dishonor. It's all right that you killed him. And the parent would have gone, I know. And I could not get that kid to obey or honor. I tried, so I killed him. And everybody be okay with that. Like there would be no, you got to take that guy to court. Now culture evolves and it makes it, you shouldn't kill your children. And so now what we arrive at is we're getting strictly figurative. That you're going to live longer if you honor and obey your parents. If you honor and obey your parents, man, they're going to love to have you around. They're going to love to give you things. They're going to love to just say, you're my kid. I give you the privileges of being my kid. If you dishonor and disobey, then you're going to find there's going to be a lot of death present in your life. Everything will feel like it's being taken away. Everything will feel like it doesn't work. You will feel like there is nothing that you can have if you dishonor and disobey. So both a figurative and a literal. The last blank we've got for you this is that obedience and respect to parents, that it glorifies God. That it glorifies God. The reason God, both in a natural and a spiritual order, would put parents in place would be that we would be able to not only obey and respect them, but that in doing so, God would be glorified through the family unit. Now, in modern culture, in the way that we live, I don't think that all of us can say that the family unit is a primary place by which God is glorified. Because there's just all kinds of tension there. And since we're just following it as we go with it, we're getting it as we go with it. So if we listen to culture about how to be both children and parents, it's probably going to be the way by which culture has gone. And culture has increasingly caused the parent and child and the family unit to just dissolve. To where you see children and parents don't have dinner together. Children and parents don't spend a lot of time together. Children and parents don't pursue each other in relationship. There's just this increasing, as long as you keep me alive and as long as you pay for my stuff and hopefully you'll pay for my college and I move out, then life is good. But that's really the way that it operates. And as long as kids don't burn the house down, go to jail, or cause the parents to look bad, then life is good that way. But when God instituted the world and said, marriage is this way, and one of the fruits of marriage is going to be to have babies, and babies with their parents is going to cause me to be glorified, because it shows, man, here's how my relationship with the world is. Children and parents give us a unique opportunity as the people of God to glorify God in how we do it. And so as children, obedience and respect will glorify God. And the easiest way for me to put it is if you as a child obey and respect your parents and you do that publicly, watch how different that is from your peers. Because every one of you, whether 12 or 18, everybody around you is both disobeying and disrespecting their parents consistently, to the point where it's almost laughable. And so if you were to consistently obey, respect, honor your parents, then you'll find that you're going to glorify Jesus, elevate Jesus, magnify Jesus all the time because no one else is doing it, because it's not present in anybody else. Like you often don't find just really awesome, well-behaved kids outside of the people of God. There's not a lot of that. There's small percentages, but not a lot. But what should be true of us as the people of God is it should be overwhelmingly true of us that we obey, respect, and honor our parents, and that in doing so, God's glorified. And there isn't a precedence in the Bible where it says if you have bad parents, you don't have to do so. Like Ephesians didn't say, if your parents are jerks, disobey, dishonor, disrespect, because they're jerks. It says they gave them to you as parents, and so obedience and respect is present. The only way that the Bible gives any kind of out is that if your obedience and respect and honor of your parents causes you to disobey, disrespect, or dishonor God. That's the only platform where God says it's better to honor God than honor parents. But I can say for you as a teenager, 99.999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999
has nothing to do. It's that tension with you in having to respect and honor somebody who's over you and you starting to feel like you're smarter than them. And so just because you know how to log the computer on doesn't make you smarter than your parents, right? Just because your parents have to ask, why is my phone broken? and you can fix it doesn't make you more smart, more intelligent, any of that. And what our culture is going to do is, again, it's going to try to pit you against each other to make your parents the enemy of you. And if your parents are on the planet, I guarantee you, regardless of who your parent is, you can have a tyrant as a parent. An absolute godless, hellful tyrant of a man or a woman as a parent. And that there's still love present for you because when they look at you, that they made you. And so you can have the absolute worst parents in the world. And I know some of you don't have great godly parents, but there's still obedience, respect, and honor due. And so for me, man, both of my parents are not in the place where I would say, man, crafted an awesome godly example, said, here's how you follow Jesus. I spent most of my life knowing Jesus was real, sometimes attending church. Man, I didn't experience Jesus till I was 15, and then the pendulum swung crazy. That in that moment, my mom started looking to me as the person who knew Jesus more than she did, and my dad doesn't know God at all. It doesn't remove me from the place where obedience, respect, and honor are still due to my dad and are still due to my mom. And both of them, and they would stand here themselves and say, both of them have had opportunity at which I as a son would have moments or little vignettes where I could say, and they would say, dishonor, disrespect, or disobedience was due. Because every parent will make mistakes and will botch it often. Because guess what? You're looking at humanity that's just older than you are. So you'll make mistakes that your parents made when they were your age, and your parents are just finding new ways to make mistakes. Because odds are, if you're the firstborn, they've never had one of you before. So when you start driving, you're the first. When you graduate, you're the first. When you move out, you're the first. So they've got no other learning curve except you. And so guess what? As you're the first, anything you do for the first time, you're going to make all kinds of mistakes. The good thing about parents and children is you've got 18 years of mistake making. We're just going to find new ways as a parent to make mistakes. But as a child, that does not give you opportunity to say, ha ha, you made a mistake. Boom, told you, as if you've never made one yourself. As if you've never had a point at which you've botched it and made a mistake. And so what God does for us is he says, as I'm your father and paint an example for you and say, here's how life should be done. I've given you parents so that they could say to you, in the day that you live, in the age that you live, in the time that you live, here's how life is supposed to be done. Your parents are going to teach you how to eat. They're going to teach you how to drive. They're going to teach you how to put clothes on. They're going to teach you how to go to the bathroom. They're going to teach you how to walk. They're going to teach you how to go to school. They're going to teach you how to have manners. They're going to teach you how to interact with people. They're going to teach you how to go to restaurants, how to go to movies, how to not embarrass mommy or daddy in public, how to, you know, politely walk to the bathroom and not scream because you know you're getting a spanking, how not to try to tuck it in when you try to get a spanking. Your parents are going to teach you all kinds of things because they're going to show you, here's how you live life. And every one of you is the product of your parents saying, here's how life is lived. And regardless of how bad or how great of an example your parent was, every one of us is where we are today primarily because of our parents. And so if any measure of success is given to any of us, our parents deserve a lot of the credit, regardless of whether they love Jesus or not. That they showed you the way that life is led. And when we get into parents next week, a lot of us parent compensating for our parents. And so we say, my parents did it like this, and I said I'm never going to do it like that, so I'm going to do it like this. And what happens when we swing the pendulum that way is we're not doing that, but we've created all kinds of new things we're doing. That our parents may have got it wrong here, but now we're getting it wrong way over here. And one of the best things for any of us is when we obey, honor, and respect our parents, it's just as easy for us to pick up the phone and say, mom or dad, I've got a kid that I'm raising, and I've run into this issue. And then mom and dad are going to laugh and say, when it was you, here's what I did. And you're going to go, oh, and you're going to get it. Because your parents have said, here's the way life should be led. One of the most beautiful things about Jesus is he didn't just say, do these things because I told you so. Do these things because it's right. He gave us an example to be able to say, if you do this with your parents, it'll show you the way it works between you and I. And so the band's going to come up here, and they're going to lead us in some tunes. We're all going to pray together real quick before they do so. So if everybody wants to stand to their feet, we're going to get ready to get into some worship tonight.